Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. When it comes to American presidential debates, the winner is often in the eye of the beholder. And the bar is lower today. Both Trump and Harris can claim they didn't lose the debate. But was the needle moved? Crosstalking the Trump-Harris debate, I'm joined by my guest, Garland Nixon in Washington. He's a political analyst. In Columbus, we have Misty Winston. She is an activist and host of Action for Assange. And in Miami, we cross to Angie Wong. She is a Miami Executive District Committee woman. All right, gentlemen and ladies, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Misty first, because Garland and I have a little bit of an advantage over you ladies on this program, because we're just a lot older, okay? So, Misty, and I want Garland's input after this. You know, I've been watching presidential debates since 1976. Do the math. You can figure out how old I am, okay? But, Misty, there was something very, very different about this debate than any other presidential debate. What was it?
Well, I would say that I can't really think of much difference. There was really no substance. There was really nothing that, I mean, it was interesting to me because I felt like there was definitely a setup where the moderators were certainly a That's little right. one-sided.
If oh, a little say, bit, just
a little bit. But I don't think that's surprising to anyone. I think that that was probably expected. I think that we've seen the way in debates past that, they've been leaning in that direction, depending on who the moderators are. Of course, if you have a Fox News moderator, then they tend to maybe be slightly more fair or lean a little more Trump. But I think that it is definitely obvious that these moderators were leaning a little heavy in favoritism towards Kamala Harris.
Well, you think? I mean, Garland, I think at one point the moderator was going to ask the question, then answer the question for Harris. I mean, this was so blatant. I mean, I was shocked. And I'm not taking sides, okay? I'm disappointed with both candidates. I'm disappointed with American politics in general. This is the best they can find. This is really incredible here. But the sense of justice, the sense of injustice, Garland, in this debate.
Yeah, I think that what we had was Donald Trump was in an argument with the moderators, and every now and then Kamala Harris would interrupt the argument that he was having mostly with David. And I think, you know, interestingly enough, I think that was a dynamic that a lot of people picked up. I've heard that discussion. And I think that's something that probably was a value to Donald Trump. I think it also, oddly enough, helped to cement his argument that he's an outsider, which is a difficult argument for a guy who's been president to make. But when the whole system, everything was leaning against Donald Trump, I think if you're sitting there watching it, the people who already kind of had an inclination to think that Donald Trump was an outsider or the system didn't want him are going to see that in that particular dynamic. And I think, interestingly enough, I think it helps Donald Trump.
You know, Angie, that's a really interesting observation because ever since the debate, probably still ongoing now, is that it's the media that is being polled about the result. The media is deciding who is the winner and loser. And I don't really care what they think because it's always a default position to the establishment. And obviously, Kamala Harris is the vessel for the establishment today. But do you think it will percolate down? I mean, a lot of people watched it, Angie.
Oh, yeah, half the world watched it. And here's the thing. What we saw was the prosecutor and the defendant that night.
Very good.
And they played very well into those roles. Kamala Harris knew exactly what trigger words she needed to say to get Trump completely on the defense for pretty much 85% of the entire program. And he, for some reason, wasn't well-trained enough to actually notice that. So he fell right into it. He spent the entire show defending himself,
I'm glad you
not
called
talking
it,
about
I'm,
policies.
Angie, I'm glad you called it a show, because that's exactly what it was.
Yes.
Keep going.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was plenty scripted. Kamala Harris was very well trained. She stuck to the script. She stuck to her talking points. And ultimately, what I saw, and I'm a MAGA Republican, what I saw was someone who can actually compete with Donald Trump, which we had yet to see on this entire election. She can stand up to that man and talk. Not only with him, but at him. And I think a lot of that happened that
well,
night. She was talking at him.
Angie, you bring up a really good point. I was going to go to it later, but since you mentioned it, I'd like to ask you, what is the difference between Donald Trump in 2016 and 2024?
You know, I was hoping that he would elevate. I was, you know, you had a split screen of two presidential candidates who looked like the commander in chief. He already had that going for him, but now she really stepped it up. And certainly the ABC producers helped her elevate, right? Everything from the camera angles. You only saw a side profile of her for most of the program, which I thought was quite interesting. And they leveled up their shoulders. I mean, all of it was to position her. So she definitely had the leg up. What's the difference? Donald Trump, I don't know what happened, but he went into MAGA rally Donald Trump. I'm the best.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to hear that. He did not know his audience, and his staff did not train him well for that. He thought he was going to debate Joe Biden 2.0. That's not what he got.
Yeah, I mean, Garland, I said it a few months ago. You know, considering the campaign that the Trump people are running, I mean, the less he says, the better. That's in my opinion. That's my strategist's opinion here. I'm sorry, let me go to Misty here right now. Misty, one of the things that we found, I think the Democratic Party completed its rebranding during that debate, because now it's the party of the neocons, it's a party of the deep state, it's the party of mega donors. I mean, this is the final rebranding of it. And Joe Biden was just an irritant to it because he was just a stubborn person. I have to watch my language here. But it seems to me the rebranding is complete. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say that that's probably pretty accurate. I think at this point they have sort of slow walked that progression, I think, amongst their base. I think that obviously wouldn't have been something that they could sell overnight. I think it's something that they've had to really kind of lead their voting base into. I think it really started with Bill Clinton, I think, but yep. I think really Obama was very effective in starting to shift that very dramatically. And I think after Obama, they really just had a couple tweaks to make here and there. And I think Kamala Harris is now really sealing that deal.
Yeah, I mean, Carlin, having the Democratic nominee embracing Dick Cheney. I mean, explain to me what's going on here.
Well, that's what the party is now. This is very much the Democratic Party having turned into the Republican Party of George Bush of 2006, yep. And that's pretty clear. I do think in the debate that a lot of this stuff was fluffed. I think that, you know, it was fluff. It was a lot. There was a lot of talk, and there was a, you know, back and forth and the moderators and all that. But I do think the concrete issues were, number one, inflation. I think number two/2A were foreign policy and immigration. I do think that that Donald Trump scored. I mean, he talked about inflation a bit, and that's what's bothering people the most. I do think it was a very, very he made some powerful statements when he talked about World War III and stopping the Ukraine war. So. You know, notwithstanding the punches that she got in, the name calling and the blathering and babbling about people eating pets and things of that nature, I think the things that people were listening for, where their ears perked up like a German shepherd, were inflation. Donald Trump doesn't want war and she does.
Yeah,
okay,
Garland,
I heard that.
That's exactly how I received it. Angie, you know, a lot of words were said. I tend to agree with Garland because Trump was president. Oddly enough, he had to defend his record, and he didn't criticize enough of the Biden administration. That's kind of a nuance that I thought was interesting. But Kamala Harris absolutely said nothing, from what I could tell, other than just expressing a vibe. I mean, to be honest with you, I was watching it, and I had my iPad right next to me, and I just lost interest in when she was talking. I turned to my iPad. Nothing was being said, but she was the winner as a result, apparently. Angie.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot to be said about that. The less she talks about her policies, the better it is for her. She doesn't have to commit to it. You know, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont kind of let it out of the bag the other day that Kamala Harris will do and say anything she has to say to get elected. And that's part of the game. I mean, we're at the very end stretch of a very critical election here. So she's gonna say all those words. Look, she presented well. She did not really, she wasn't as shaky as I thought she would be. Up until now, we don't really know who Kamala Harris is, right? She didn't do a lot of interviews. This was a first taste of her for a lot of Americans. I think that as far as policy goes, if I were Trump, I think he had a missed opportunity here. He should have said, look, Kamala Harris, you have 50 days left before the election. Why don't you go back to Washington and do all of those things that you're promising tonight to do?
Yeah, but he could have closed the entire so-called debate after Harris was asked the first question, essentially Ronald Reagan's question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? She just completely avoided answering the first question. If I'd been Trump, I would have said, aren't you going to make her answer the question? Go ahead, Garland, jump in.
Let me throw something in real quick. But what did he say that was powerful? He said at the end, in his closing statement, you've been here for 4 years. He said all of that stuff. You've been here 3.5, 4 years. How come you didn't do any of that stuff? I think that in the closing statement was strong because it made all of those points. That what are you babbling for now with all these plans? You haven't done any of them. And I think it made the entire point about her alleged new policies.
You know, Misty, you started off by saying this was a prosecution, and I think you're absolutely right, because if you go back forensically and look at the debate, you know, that Trump was given arguments. He wasn't given questions. That didn't happen to Harris. Everything was argumentative to him. Yeah. Go ahead, Misty.
Yeah, of course. I think that's they know Donald Trump and they know exactly how to bait him. And unfortunately, he fell for it every single time. He was baited numerous times and he fell for it nearly every time. And I think that is something, as you mentioned, I think he really seemed to come in unprepared. I don't know if he was just totally underestimating Kamala Harris, which I wouldn't blame him if he did. I think that she has set a very low bar for herself with the word salads and her, you know, creepy giggling and all of that stuff. I think she has kind of created this caricature of herself where she has kind of become a joke. And so I don't know if he just drastically underestimated her capabilities, but I think that was probably very obviously set up. They knew exactly which buttons to push.
We're going to have to go to a break here, but never underestimate your opponent. That's the first rule of politics here. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the Trump-Harris debate. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. Remind you, we're discussing the Trump-Harris debate. Okay, let's go back to Angie in Miami. Garland mentioned it in the first part of the program about foreign policy and the wars that are going on. We have in what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in Gaza and the West Bank and the Middle East in general. But very little time was spent on it, and it was very boilerplate. And I'm critical of Donald Trump for differentiating himself more and allowing the deep state narrative to prevail here. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why I said, you know, what we see now is this kind of elite agenda. World War III is very much in the cards right now, and that's something that I discuss on this program a lot. Kamala Harris even claims that no U.S. troops are deployed in combat zones. Nobody pushed back on that. Angie.
No. And there was no fact checking. Look, I mean, I was disappointed actually at both candidates for that answer. You had Donald Trump, who could have said a lot and really cornered Kamala Harris in this. Instead, he said, I'm just going to, within 24 hours, I'm going to pick up the phone and call up both men and tell them to stop it. I mean, that's his approach. Okay, I understand that. If I were Donald Trump, I would have attacked Kamala Harris for trying to have it both ways. And that was her response, right? She was trying to please the Jewish base and also the Palestinian base at the same time. And we've seen her do that time and time again. She cannot afford to lose places like Minnesota or Michigan, where there's a huge Arab American population. But I, as Donald Trump, I would have also attacked her for all the neocons supporting her race, like the Dick Cheneys and the Liz Cheneys and the military complex, right? But he didn't go there. And that's why I feel like he was a little bit off his game. Look, Donald Trump has been campaigning very, very well for the last 2 years since he announced in November 2022. I'm going to give him one night of oopses. He can have one night.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of mystified. I mean, they were all obviously geared to run against Biden, and they've been caught off guard. They haven't adjusted their game. Missy, since, you know, we were talking about how the neocons have infiltrated the Democratic Party, let's not forget, you know, Bernie Sanders is coming out and endorsing Harris. I mean, you have a great deal of the political spectrum just collapsing right now, okay? And that's not even to speak of the Never Trumpers in the Republican Party. I mean, we talk a lot about this program about the uniparty, but it's literally turning into a uniparty. Go ahead, Misty.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And listen, Bernie Sanders is not far off from a neocon if you look at his actual record. I mean, this guy has voted for numerous things over the course of his career. He's done a very good job of creating this mythology of him being this plucky outsider anti-war candidate who's some kind of a progressive. He's really not. He has been in lockstep with the Democratic Party since the 90s. And so it's really not of any surprise to me or anybody who's been paying attention to him and his actual record that he is supporting Kamala Harris. I think he has long been a coward. He has long been somebody who is been willing to go along with the Democratic Party. And I mean, he's all over Twitter, you know, talking about these horrible things that the Democratic Party is currently doing, and then he endorses them. So, I mean, the cowardice there is really off the charts, but you're absolutely correct. The uniparty is really, that's been this kind of so-called conspiracy theory for some time now, but I think it's really unavoidable at this point. That's exactly what we have.
You know, Garland, what the real winner, because we haven't really talked who really won or lost, and I don't really care, because it seems patently obvious to me the winner was the establishment. The status quo won.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, ultimately, when it comes down to it, I don't think this moves the needle. As I said, I think it maybe cements Donald Trump's position as an outsider. It allows the Democrats to, you know, all get together and say, you know, Kamala is better than you thought she was, which we thought she was really, really terrible. But I don't think it really moves things. I'll say this on Bernie Sanders, too. If you look at his history, back in the 90s, and I recall this well, he pushed back against NAFTA. And he said everything right. It's terrible, blah, 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 all his predictions. When Bill Clinton got it through a couple years later, 96, he's out there pushing for Bill Clinton again. So he has good policies, but no principles to back up the policies, so he can point out all the terrible things that the Democrats are doing quite frequently, very well, not always. He takes some bad positions too. But when it comes to having principles to stand for what he believes in, they're gone. They just wash away like an old bridge in a storm. And he comes out and says, we gotta support the Democrats because they're better than the Republicans, even when they aren't.
Well, I don't know the difference between the two anymore. Okay, sorry, okay.
Right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, Angie, one of the things I found really exasperating, particularly from Kamala Harris, is that she talked a lot about her origins in the middle class and her hopes for the middle class. Well, neither political party has thought about the middle class for a good part of 40 years right now. Again, this is like a treadmill over and over again. You can't put food on the table with a vibe. And that's the message I got from that. Okay. And again, I agree with Garl. I mean, Trump could have just hammered away on the economy. He didn't. Go ahead, Angie.
Yeah, absolutely. She had to use those key phrases. We are moving forward. We're not going backwards. She was constantly using that rhetoric. And you know what? That's stuff that I've seen in other elections. It does work. I mean, it sticks in your mind. She has to talk about her origins and her race and her gender because guess what? Her base votes on those very ideals. And they want the first female president. They want all those things. That means more to them than any policy, than eggs costing $1 a piece in the U.S. right now. They don't care about that. They care about looks, and they care about ideology, and they want their first female president. And that's what she was talking to. Now, to me, she says all those things. It's like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. I only want to hear policies, but that wasn't... She knew how to play her audience, and she played it well.
Yeah, Misty, I mean, so is this really just kind of the female version of Barack Obama?
Yeah, kind of, a little bit. And it's also, I think, a bit of a vindication campaign for Hillary Clinton. I think that the base desperately wanted their first female president then. I think that they were angry that they didn't get it. So I think that that's kind of reinforced their vigor this time around. And I think that I love that you're calling it vibes, because this is a campaign solely on vibes. It took her, I don't even know how many days, to get a policy page up on her website. And it really shouldn't have been that difficult. I mean, she has been in office, as you mentioned, for 3.5 years now. So I think she's running on the whole vibes and joy thing. And It's so ridiculous. It reminds me of Hope and Change. So the comparison to Barack Obama, I think, is definitely apt.
Well, so Garland, go ahead, Garland. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how about this? She calls herself Black. Both her parents had PhDs. Go to the Black community and tell me how many people with both parents have PhDs that think they grew up in the struggle. You know, she's like, oh, I grew up, it was tough, it was pop. Both of your parents had PhDs. Neither of my parents had a high school degree. My dad was a longshoreman. We lived a middle class life. It's absurd to argue that both of your parents had PhDs and you somehow came out of the hood in poverty, which she seems to be pushing. It's absurd.
So, Garland, are we being sold the bill of goods that if it's a woman of color, it will make genocide in Gaza more acceptable? Because that's what it seems to be telling me.
It's just a narrative. It reminds me of the neocon foreign policy. There is nothing behind Kamala Harris but narrative. She has no history of politics. There's no, the few things that they put her in charge of over the last 4 years, she absolutely blew completely. She blew every one of them, off and didn't even show up at the border. The things they told her to do, she was either unable or unwilling to do. So there is no substance there. So now they got to put her out there and say she's a woman of color or whatever, some weird narrative, but there's nothing there for them to argue. She has no body of work.
Well, it seems to me, I don't want to be too cruel here, Angie, but given the 3.5 years that Kamala Harris has been vice president and her lack of activity or whatever, I guess it's now pretty obvious she was just waiting for them to knife Joe Biden. That's what she's been waiting for, Angie. And they did.
Yeah,
they did.
And they did. Look, I mean, this whole thing has been a Hollywood script from beginning to end, right? And even when Donald Trump said on stage, well, here's the border czar, she shook her head. I mean, how many videos could we pull up of Joe Biden giving her the role of border czar? She is just gaslighting you. And you know what? I had to think about that for a second. She was lying on many points during the night. And the moderators let it go, but it was there just to trigger Trump, and he fell for it each and every time. And that's what we saw, and that's why we're calling it a show. We saw the performance. We're at Act 3 or Act 4 now. I can't wait to see Act 5.
Misty, she hasn't garnered one vote in this primary and general election. I mean, explain how that happens. Okay, there's no election test here. Okay, and now we're going into the final stretch. It's extraordinary.
It is fascinating.
Gavin Newsom must be so upset. Go ahead, Misty.
Right. It's fascinating, and especially because this is the Democratic Party who has long been clutching their pearls that Donald Trump is an existential threat to democracy. What democracy? There's no democracy here. This is a fully anointed candidate. And you mentioned, will this woman of color somehow make the genocide better? It's literally the meme, Peter. It's the meme where the bombs now have a rainbow flag, so it's fine. It is so absurd to me, and you're right. She has earned zero votes. And in fact, the last time that she ran, she had to drop out of the race before her home state so that she could avoid being embarrassed. So this is somebody that nobody has ever liked. And I will say that the way that they have been able to turn this around and get so much support for her, at least superficially, and the way that the media has been able to push that narrative forward has been really fascinating to watch, because she went from a totally reviled candidate and vice president to now having a tremendous amount of support somehow.
Misty, read my mind, because after they cooed Biden, I said, now you're going to see the most extravagant, sophisticated marketing program ever. One minute, Garland, go finish off the program for us.
Well, this is the exact democracy that the neocons are, in fact, exporting around the world. They want to go to your country. They want the U.S. elite to pick the leader of your country with no input from the people. And then once that person gets in power, they want to do things that are going to benefit the ruling elite in the U.S. This is the democracy model that they're spreading around the world. Anybody who wants to understand what they want to bring to their country, just look at what's going on in the Democratic Party and Kamala Harris. That's your model.
Yeah, because what we have, all of you and to my dear viewers, is that we have forced regime change has come home. I predicted this in December of 2017, and it's continuing. And on this program, we'll keep observing. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Columbus, and in Miami. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.